Welcome to the Everything Action Cast, the official podcast of everythingaction.com. Hello and welcome to the Everything Action Cast. It's a podcast for week of October 11th, 2021. I'm your host, Zach, and joining us this week we have Chris.
Hello.
And we got tons of stuff this week. We've got a bunch of trailers to dig into. We've got, I saw No Time to Die, so we'll dive into that later. All 2 hours and 43 minutes of it.
Almost saw like an Avengers movie.
It's pretty much like Bond Endgame or something. So I'll get into it later. But yeah, so let's kick things off with some trailers. And I think because Halloween Kills is out, if you're hearing this, Halloween Kills is out now. And I'm assuming at least one of these or some of these trailers are going to be in front of that movie this weekend. But we did get the first trailer for Scream 5, which is just being called Scream. I guess following in the heels of Halloween.
They're like Rambo.
In Rambo, I guess, yeah. Although, this one's definitely more Rambo than Halloween, because this one is like Scream 5 is not erasing any movies from continuity. Like it's 100% a sequel to Scream. Like the all four are still in continuity. It's a sequel
to
Scream 4.
The TV show?
I think the TV show is like a its own like universe or continuity. Like that's like a reboot continuity thing. That's not the actual like.
I thought it was, but then I kind of read somewhere that it's actually like the movies exist and they're like inspired by the movies. At least that's what I understood as the MTV Scream.
Yeah, well, I think it's a different. I mean, it's definitely a different town.
No, but like the movie inspired the event, so like the movie's a movie.
Oh, so like the Scream movies. Are movies in the Scream show?
At least that's how I understood it as.
Well, it's like turning into like a snake eating its own tail thing, because there's like in the actual Scream movies, there's like Stab, which is like the like fake Scream inside of Scream.
Yeah, yeah, which is inspired by Scream.
Like yeah.
The first movie. It's weird. But you know, I kind of like didn't give that show a chance. I heard it was okay. I mean, it kept the fandom alive to this point.
Yeah. Well, Scream 4 was, 2011. So that was 10 years ago. So it's been 10 years since the actual, like, proper movie. And then, yeah, the TV show has, like, run 3 seasons, like, since then. Jeez. So Scream, aka Scream 5, is coming in January next year, January 14th. And there's a new Ghostface running around killing teens, and pretty much a bunch of the old gang is back. So Neve Campbell's back, David Arquette, Courtney Cox, and then Marley Shelton, who was in Scream 4, is also back from that movie. And then some of the new, quote unquote, teens. Are like Jack Quaid from The Boys and Melissa Barrera and Jenna Ortega and Dylan Minnette.
And Jack Quaid looks like an adult. Seriously looks like he just like didn't have a teenage phase.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it seems like they're definitely like kind of like trying to get some of that like Halloween. Like, where it's all the old favorites are back to help like the new younger group. Fight Ghostface or whatever, or like,
and like, wasn't Neve Campbell's like niece one of the villains in one of the movies?
Well, it was, yeah. I haven't seen 3 or 4. I've only seen 1 and 2. I've never seen
really
3 or 4.
I think 3 is okay. 4, I think, is the one where it's like it's happening again, like another series of murders, and it turns out it's like spoiler alert, like it's Neve Campbell's niece who wants to be like a serial killer. So that way it's her legacy now. Like, it's okay. She kind of pretends she's like the victim.
Yeah.
And then, her plan was to like try to, get the revival back. It's like, okay, it's been so long, and then they're like, yeah, this is how he ended, but then it's like crazy, like evil never sleeps, and it turns out it's like in the family now. And it was a good idea. I didn't like it at the time, but now as I understood how the franchise evolved, I didn't mind it.
And it was still Wes Craven, because he directed all four of the first movies. And obviously he passed away in 2015. So,
and they were just like, let's make more.
Yeah, well, this one is directed by the team that directed Ready or Not, the like Samara Weaving hide and seek movie from like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also worked on like VHS and Southbound and a couple other like kind of indie horror movies. But yeah, I mean, it looks like Scream. Like Ghostface is there, like all the OG cast is there, so it's gonna be like a whodunit again to figure out who do Ghostface is and why they're doing what they're doing. Like the plot, like the log line is like, oh, there's like this new Ghostface is like trying to like uncover secrets of like Woodsboro or something. So there's like some sort of town secret they're trying to like bring to light or something.
I wonder if that's gonna help it or it's gonna make it more like far away from the source, because I feel like it shouldn't really be about like a town against the killer. It should really be this killer who just has like a weird ass connection to the targets.
Yeah,
but if it's like, oh yeah, no, Ghostface killer is like a descendant of like this man we murdered, and it's just like, oh, so Ghostface killer is like the good guy in this time.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm surprised, after all these movies, like Ghostface killer hasn't fought someone that was like equally evil or worse. So now it's like, well, you know, like a Freddy versus Jason scenario. So it's like, all right, like go Ghostface killer, kill that land developer. Or mm-hmm. kill that, like, corrupted, like, town sheriff, or, you know what I mean? Or something like that.
I also, like, what is, like, the commentary you can do for, like, the fifth movie in the franchise? Like, what, like, because, like, if you think about, like, what was, like, the fifth, like, Nightmare on Elm Street movie was, like, what, Dream Master or something? And then, like, Halloween 5 was, Revenge of Michael Myers. It's like, is the meta camera like the fifth one is like usually like that's when the franchise starts like losing steam or something, or like
typically, right? Like I understood it as usually by then, if it hasn't devolved into family, you know, or it's like the next generation.
Yeah,
I don't know where they go, but now Nev Campbell's back, and I mean, that's great, but I don't think they're going to kill her off so easily. I could be wrong. You know, she's in it for 5 minutes and gets, like, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis Halloween H2O'd.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, not Halloween. It was, like, the other Halloween movie.
Wait, which one? The reboot one?
Yeah, the one where Jamie Lee Curtis dies in it.
Oh, was that? It was either Resurrection or H2O. I think it's Resurrection. Yeah.
Resurrection. But I actually don't mind H2O, but like Resurrection really killed it for me. But that's what I'm saying. Like it was like unconnected, but the fact that they're bringing it in, doing all the right things, I've got hope. But you know, my love of Scream is just like, I hope they make another scary movie now.
Oh God. Like,
we return to that franchise, make it better.
Yeah, thankfully, like, who those? I can't remember, like, the two guys, but, like, yeah, thankfully they kind of, like, burned out. Like, there hasn't been one of those movies that'll, like, epic movie or, like, whatever the hell they were doing. Like super, like, I didn't, they did, like a Fast and Furious one that was, like, super fast or something. Or, like, Meet the Spartans.
Oh, yeah, like, oh, my. Were those maybe the same guys or, like?
Yeah, it was, like, I think it was like Seltzer and Friedman or something. It was like the team that was behind all those horrible movies. Yeah. So Hopefully that doesn't give those guys any ideas. or maybe give someone who like is actually talented like ideas. But yeah, so Scream's back in January next year, so get ready for that one. And then we also another horror movie trailer we got that might be in front of Halloween. As far as we don't know, but I guess if you go into the theater this week to find out is The Black Phone, which is the latest. It's a reunion of Ethan Hawke and Scott Derrickson, who you know teamed up for Sinister a couple years ago, and then Scott Derrickson went on to like direct Doctor Strange. But now he's back to horror. He's back with Ethan Hawke, and it's based on a story by Joe Hill, who is, you know, wrote Lock and Key, also like the son of Stephen King, a bunch of Creepshow episodes. This is based on a story that he wrote. And Ethan Hawke is a child killer, kidnapper, who's called nicknamed the Grabber, and he's kidnapping kids and murdering them. And then his latest victim is this kid named Finney. And so Finney's like trapped in the basement, and there's like an old phone on the wall that is not really connected to anything. But then he starts getting calls on it from like, it's like the spirits of like the kids that died previously. And they're like trying to help him. Like they all have like different like skills to teach him or like information for him to like try to escape. So they're basically like all these like ghost kids are like working together to help him get a, like escape. And then Finney's sister is like having like visions and dreams of like where Finney is. So she's like trying to like help the police like figure out where they are, like get them like go and like arrest Ethan Hawke and like save her brother.
It's different for Ethan Hawke to try to be the murderer. Usually he's running away from being murdered by some family killer.
Yeah, it definitely looks like he's gonna be doing a really good job of being like this like super creepy creep. Like he's got like a you know scary mask that he's wearing the entire time, like this like kind of devil the mask and like.
But it looks like the Burger King.
Kinda, yeah. Or like a twilight, like it's like the Twilight Zone, like a devil, like you're like being the devil in like the Twilight Zone or something, and it's like the mask you'd wear.
Yeah. It just doesn't look like a form-fitting mask. It just looks like a very elaborate mask.
Yeah.
It's like a headpiece.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it looks interesting. Hopefully it, like, can live up to, like, their previous collaboration, Sinister. And they'll be out on February 4th next year. So, kind of early 2022 horror coming your way. And then we also got the first trailer this week for One Shot, which is a new Scott Adkins movie. But the big selling point of this one is that it is shot in real time, and it's the entire movie is one take. So it's like a long continuous take. Like you start with Scott Adkins and you follow him all the way through. I'm sure it's probably like I'm sure they like it's not like
a true one shot.
Like I'm sure there has to be like spaces where they could like put a cut in somewhere, but it's gonna be like as close to like a whole like entire movie one shot as you can get. And basically, like Skaggins is like a Navy SEAL who like is like he's like part of this team that goes to, like the CIA black site. That because there's like a terrorist there that they need to question because like he might have information about this like impending attack on Washington D.C. But then another group like a group of terrorists attack the base. So it's basically the entire movie is like them trying to like defend the base and survive and get information to stop this attack in Washington D.C. possibly. And then along with Scott Adkins, Ashley Green and Ryan Phillippe co-star. And it's kind of weird because like the trailer, like just can't sell like trailer literally cannot sell the idea of this movie, like because the trailer is like cut like a normal like movie or like a trailer, but it's gonna be one long take, so you can't sell like it's like you it's weird where it's like unless they like just have like a extended scene in that for a trailer like you can't really get the idea of what the hell this movie actually is.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those things where unless you see it all. Flow and action, a trailer is going to have breaks and, you know, fade ins and fade outs.
Yeah.
you can't fully grasp unless it's one trailer that's just like a special filmed version of the movie.
Or you just show like a 3 minute, 4 minute scene as it is in the movie. It'd be like, this is like, it's like this, but like for 90 minutes or whatever.
Yeah. It's really hard to show one take to really emphasize it.
Yeah.
Especially if it's like a highlight reel of a different one of the same take, supposedly.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm also thinking, unless they, I don't know. Do you remember, okay, this is a small tangent. Do you remember that old Pepsi, not the Pepsi, the like Dr. Pepper, like one, like it's only for men?
Yes.
Commercial where it's like the most macho guy. He's like driving through shit and he catches a football. And he like runs through the jungle and he's like in one of those like dune buggies. It's like, that's a one take. It just looks ridiculous. You know, like you can't translate that into a legit movie. You just think it's like some weird product. It's like, oh, Scott Atkins promoting like deodorant. Or like, you know, speed stick.
Well, he's done like sequences in movie. Like it's not obviously an entire movie, but he's done like the end of like Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning. It was like that hallway fight, yeah.
Which I legit think back, I'm like, I think that's like the first time I've seen a hallway fight that was legit like a hallway fight.
Yeah. But definitely interested to see if they could pull this off, because like that'd be, if they could pull this off and that have it be like actually like awesome action movie, but it's all like one take, that'd be probably pretty special. So it's gonna be November 5th. It's gonna be in select theaters and on demand. So probably definitely gonna try to check that one out as soon as it comes out.
That's weird that it's select theaters. Like, it makes it seem like it's an indie movie.
It's a bunch of, like, these are, it's going to be mostly the probably on demand and video on demand, but it, like they have to throw in some like LA, New York theaters, just like kind of get it out to be like a theatrical release.
I got to go to, I think LA has more specialty theaters than New York.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, here's like the Scott Atkins, like filmography like, on a Sunday.
Yeah. So, last trailer this week is that we got the first trailer for Home Sweet Home Alone, which is the Disney Plus reboot of Home Alone. It's going to come out on, I believe it's coming out on that Disney Plus day, which is November 12th. And it is it's basically the exact same premise with like some of the exact same quotes and beats seemingly in the trailer. Except this time, Archie Yates, who was like, he was in Jojo Rabbit. He was like the sidekick to like the main kid in Jojo Rabbit. Is basically the Kevin. He is Max Mercer, and then his family goes. They go on a trip to Tokyo and leave him behind. So now he's home alone. And then there's a pair of married crooks who are played by Ellie Kemper and Rob Delaney, who are trying. They want to rob like some sort of like family heirloom that's like very valuable in their house. And then the normal like home alone beat like traps and wackiness ensue.
I am not a fan of this. I'm just going to let that be known.
It was like the fact that they were like just like have basically shot for shot from the original one and like quotes from the original one. Like, it's just like, all right, no, like you're just like, this is like a soulless cash grab or whatever.
It feels like another country made this movie.
Yeah.
You know, it feels so bizarre and just like heartless. And then, unfortunately, like, I know some of the, like, you know, like, you see the actors, I'm like, why is Pete Holmes in this? And then,
yeah,
it's
like all these talented comedians got, like, just sucked into this thing for whatever reason. Like, Holmes is dead.
Parnell's
in there. Kenan Thompson's in there.
Kenan Thompson's
there? Yeah, Mikey Day's gonna be in there. Andy Daly.
So Andy Daly would just be in things. I understand why he's in it, but what? Like, what dirt did Disney have on these people to be in this?
Well, I think probably less dirt and just more, like, dump trucks of money.
Yes. I just know it's not going to be great. Like, it's just all my instincts are just screaming about, like, how movies are presented. And I'm just like, I kind of want the robbers to win because they are sympathetic to some degree, like...
You know, I mean, it's just gonna be like literally the same, it's gonna be literally the same beat. I'm sure if you played this, like I'm sure someone, somebody will probably do this, like just like put this one and the original one side by side, and they'll probably like sync up almost perfectly because I feel like it's gonna be just the exact same beats at the exact same time. Like we already seen the trailer, like he's already like this new kid is like quoting, like pulling quotes directly from the original one, just to like just because that the original one had quotes like that, so.
Yeah,
I'm sure he'll probably like do the like they're gonna probably make him do like the like face like grab your face scream thing at some point.
I have nothing against the actor. Let me get that right. He was great in Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah.
I don't understand the family that's like blended like this, and then it's like it's the mom and like is so, Pete Holmes the dad?
Pete Holmes is the dad, and then Aisling B is the mom who is British, and then like Max is British or like British or like well, I think the mom is like supposed to be like Irish maybe, and then but then Max is like has a British accent.
I don't know. It's Disney's UK. Most Americans are not.
And then the original one just like a bunch of like random family members like going on vacation too.
Okay, but like their house is like. Like super more rich than the last time. The McAllisters were just like a very upper middle class.
Yeah.
And they lived like in a very in a Chicago's like whatever, like some sort of like Illinois suburb, right? Mm-hmm. This family looks like an arrogant family who got robbed because they didn't have the right security system in their mansion. You know what I mean? Like that's the difference. And, like, they don't have any friends. Like, I get the premise is they're home alone. But the fact that it's, like, oh, no, like, this kid who's home alone is actually it doesn't come off as, like, oh, he's a problem child and they just solved it for the day. This one they made seem like, I don't know, they're just, like, bad parents.
Yeah. And how, cell phones exist now. Like, you can FaceTime. Does Max not have a phone? Like, just call
them FaceTime
and be like... I'm guessing they leave
the phones by accident. And they have to make up a very BS excuse why they can't call the house or anyone or something.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I'm not even, like, pointing that part out. Because that's another, like, disbelief to enjoy the movie. I just don't like the fact that it seems like a very cash grab feel of just like, haha, you remember this, right? And it's like, yeah.
Well, it doesn't even seem like it's attempting to do anything different. It's just blatantly copying the original one and being like,
yeah, it's like, hey, it's more of what you love.
You like the first one, right? here it is again.
But it's so badly done, and it's shot in a very like. It also bothers me is the quality of the filming. It really just seems like a really great like camcorder. Like it doesn't seem like a Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
Like they went cheap on that.
The director is Dan Mazur, who pretty much worked with like Sacha Baron Cohen to like basically help like co-create like Borat and Bruno and LAG. Like he's like he's like a super long time collaborator with like Sacha Baron Cohen, like pretty much worked with him like on everything he's done.
Okay, so but that makes more sense for like a candid camera, like a very like almost realistic movie or kind of like a slice of life thing. Home Alone, you have to cinematically kind of lure the person in to believe that this kid is like in danger, but he's kind of like a diehard, you know, scenario. Mm-hmm. I believe this kid has all the tools he needs like before the movie begins, right? He has the money, he has the time. He has the house is doing half the fighting for him.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, go screw yourself. At least Kevin like lived in a regular family home. Like I legit believe like a family lived in that house. I look at this house in the mansion. I'm like, this is a model home. Like this is something that like, you know, is designed by a catalog and there's nothing in it that has like something wacky, you know, like something that like a household would have like. I don't know, like a grandfather clock that has a hidden compartment, or like he doesn't have a treehouse. Oh no, does he have a treehouse?
I think he does because I think they basically redo they basically redo like the oh no it's like he I was thinking like the like kind of like the like stinger at the end of the trailer was like the treehouse thing, but it's like I think he has a trampoline that's like his big like outside thing that he's using. It looks like
okay. The reason why I bring that up
because like he trips he like tricks. tricks Rod Blaine to like jump on the trampoline, but then like I think he like rigs it so like it like launches him to like a tree or something.
Right, right. I only bring that up because I'm thinking like this house doesn't need more goddamn house. Like it's already like a giant mansion with like wings. It's got like the east and west wing, and I'm like, then they made a treehouse for this kid too. Like, go screw this family.
You gotta watch at some point. The like, oh, what was it like? Noel 911, or like, it's like the French like movie that came out like a year before Home Alone came out.
Really?
Like, and if you see that house with where the kids like Home Alone, that house is like even more insane than this one. Like, it's got all kinds of like trapped. It's got literally has trap doors. It has like a whole like crazy like playroom that's like looks like you like wandered into like Narnia. Like, it's got like nets that drop from the ceiling. Like, it's insane.
Okay, but you know, in my head, I'm like, Home Alone is supposed to be like how the guy utilizes an average home to be something that like kids can dream of. I'm just speaking as like not a rich kid, so it's like I see this kid mansion, I'm like, all right, like, doesn't the mansion have like defenses? Don't you have like, you know, a gun or something, you know, like, I don't know. I just feel like the Home Alone has a beauty to it. It's like very relatable to a lot of kids. Meanwhile, in this case, I'm like, I kind of hope the kidnappers win because I feel like they're the struggling people who need to steal to pay the bill for Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm pretty sure it ends on a better note because I feel like those two aren't like part. They're not the wet bandits. Like, they're just like trying to. They're opportunists.
Yeah. I also didn't see, like if they're gonna have like, which I'm sure they probably will because they're like copying everything else, but like the like older person that like bonds with the kid, like just, like
it's another
like,
rich
neighbor. Yeah, he's their rich neighbor. Yeah,
like that's the thing. Where's your humble character? The first two Home Alone movies, you have the old man who didn't talk to his son and he misses his granddaughter, very relatable.
Pigeon Lady,
right?
Yeah,
the second movie, Pigeon Lady, weirdly homeless for a British national, and I don't know how like she wasn't picked up by INS in New York City.
Yeah.
But yeah, and this one I can't even imagine what the villain is. It's like, I mean, who the like kindly older generational friend. Even Home Alone 3 had like the nice nanny who like was misunderstood.
Was the
neighbor.
The neighbor across the street who was like this like kind of starts out as this like bitter old lady, but then you find out, oh, she's like actually like if you get to know her, she's nice or something. Like,
it's like she's misunderstood, you know.
Yeah.
And this one, I'm like, is it gonna be just like some neighbor? I bet you it's gonna be some like eccentric neighbor who has to leave his house to like help him or something.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be Macaulay Culkin, because apparently like he's gonna show up at some point as a camp in the cameo. Just like really like dig in the fact of like, get it? Is it Home Alone? Like, Kevin's really? Here. Yeah.
I know like the brother isn't there.
Yeah, David Ray Buzz is back and he's a cop now, I guess.
I mean, is that a commentary where it's like he was a bully as a kid and now he's a cop, so he could be like
maybe a yeah. bully?
I mean, that hat's off. This is the joke that they wanted to do.
Disney hitting those political beats. But yeah, November 12th, I guess we'll see what's up with this. maybe might have to watch it just to like review it and see how terrible it is. But we'll
I'm probably gonna get hammered and watch this.
Hate watch it. Yeah.
Yep.
We have to do like a watch party, Chris, or something, and just
hammered hate watching.
Yeah. So, anyway, moving on to some other news. We got some big casting news for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So we finally have our Adam Warlock, and it's going to be Will Poulter, who has been in a ton of stuff. I think the first thing I was going to is, like, we're the Millers, but, like, he's been so much stuff since then. But
and he looks like he was, like, 15 forever.
Yeah.
I think he was in The Maze Runner.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's been on, like, I think he's on that, like, Hulu show. I can't tell if it's a I don't know if it's a show or a TV series, but, like, that Dope Sick, like, the Michael Keaton show about, like, the opioid crisis. He's on that, I think.
I thought that was a movie. I didn't know that was a show.
Yeah. He was in, like, Detroit and The Revenant.
Wasn't he also in, like, Bandersnatch?
Yes.
He's the, like, cool 80s nerd.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's been doing stuff. He's a great actor, so... yeah, definitely excited to see his Adam Warlock, and I guess like finally follow through on that, like that one, the one after credits scene from Guardians Volume 2, where like the Sovereign makes the Adam Warlock, where they're cooking him at the end of Guardians of Volume 2. It is gonna be weird though, because like he didn't factor into like the Thanos Infinity Saga at all, and that was basically like the entire like arc of like comic Adam Warlock was like he was like the driving force behind like Infinity Saga.
He has the help. That was like the difference. They didn't have him the first time.
Yeah. So it's gonna be kind of weird like that he's like MCU Adam Warlock is gonna show up like after all that happens.
And he's like, now who do I fight?
I guess maybe if they like if I mean I'm sure they're gonna have to like address some like multiverse stuff in Volume 3. So maybe he's like he shows up for like a. And it's part of like the multiverse threat that's happening, or like something with like Kang or whatever else is happening.
Maybe I could see that. I could see basically he just needs some super bad device. Adam Warlock, and besides Infinity Wars, have you read a lot or seen a lot with him? Because I can't. I don't know where he's used a lot.
Well, I know after Infinity Saga, or like the Infinity Gauntlet, like he got his own. I think it was like Infinity Watch was like his like book, and then he basically got like his own like cosmic team, and they were like just like going around like solving like fighting stuff and doing stuff. It was all like weird like cosmic heroes. It was like Adam Warlock, and then it was like Drax was part like Drax and Gamora were on that team. And then, there's a good Thanos. There's like they found like a good version of Thanos, and like he joined the team. And then there's and then Doctor Strange like eventually had like his own like Infinity Watch team. Then like Loki got his own like Infinity Watch team. So, I think that's like his big that's like his big thing was like that Infinity Watch book
series. Okay.
Yeah. And then he like popped up in like event like in like crossover stuff eventually like if it's like a huge like
he would show up. If it's a huge thing, he'll show up. But other than that, because he's so powerful in the sense where like he doesn't have like any humanity in the sense where his goals like he doesn't really date anyone. He doesn't really have like he won't stop like bank robberies. Like, money means nothing to him. So, like, there's no incentive for him to come on Earth and just, like, hang out.
Yeah, he's fully in, like, the cosmic world of, like, Marvel. And especially if, like, any, like, Infinity Stone stuff is happening. But, yeah, I guess we'll see... what the MCU version is. I think that movie, I think Guardians Volume 3 is coming out in like 2 years from now, like 2023 is Guardians of the Galaxy. I think there's supposed to be like a Disney Plus, like Christmas special or something. That's going to come out before Volume 3.
Like an animated one.
I can't remember if it's animated or if it's like live action.
I thought it was animated.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's just no time for them to do all this.
Yeah, the Christmas special is gonna be next Christmas is the Christmas special, and then May 5th, 2023 is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So, other news. We got some news about a new How to Train Your Dragon show, which is, I mean, there's been like what three of them already on, like across like Netflix and like other like I don't know if Hulu got one or I think they're mostly Netflix, but I guess Peacock and Hulu are now the home to like this new show, but it's How to Train Your Dragon in the Nine Realms. It's actually it's picking up like 1,300 years after the like movie, like the original movie series and like the original, like the other like shows, and it's going to be like dragons in like the modern day, and like a new like group of kids finds dragons again, and like now it's like modern day.
Yeah, it's the classic dragon. It's the classic guy, like a guy wearing a hoodie and a jacket, yep, and jeans, like.
Yep.
The one thing is, I feel like the quality went down, and it looks really like.
I mean, it's a show. I mean, it's a show. It's not a movie, so.
Is that? But the show's quality looks like very like, hockey. Like it looks mid-2000s.
Yeah.
I saw the screen cap of it. I was like, I can't tell if it's like a screen cap or what's going on, but it doesn't look like. It's from this era.
It's weird because like I feel like the plot is like basically like Reign of Fire, where it's like a some sort of like earthquake or like geological thing like opens up like a hole to like the Earth's center, and now like dragons reemerge.
I also feel like they should have documented that about this, like where dragons are and what you shouldn't do with the Earth because of the other world.
Yeah.
But didn't that hole open back up again? Because that's how the end of How to Train Your Dragons, like, 2 or 3, they, like, Hiccup came back. Oh, not Hiccup, like, Toothless showed up again. Like, a 10-year jump.
Yeah, with, like, his, like, kids.
Because
he and, like, the Light Fury mated, and then, like, they have, like, a bunch of kids, and they came back.
Oh, it was a nice way to send off the series because, you know, you kind of, it's like all the dragons, like, they can't stay because they're not really, like, they don't really belong here, but then they can, they just don't want to, because, but they come from another world. Honest, I was sad when Gerard Butler was exited the series.
But, yeah, this new show will be on Peacock and Hulu. On December 23rd, so you can check that out if you're a How to Train Your Dragon fan.
I'm surprised. I mean, again, Netflix helped that series, I think.
Yeah, I think all the previous like shows were on Netflix, because like Netflix and DreamWorks had that big deal. But I guess, is DreamWorks, does NBC own, or like the NBC Universal own DreamWorks?
Yes.
So that would explain.
Well, like, NBC Universal owns.
Yes. DreamWorks. Which owns part of Hulu and owns all of Peacock, so that would make more. I guess that would make sense. Like, well, we're not going to give Netflix our content anymore. We're like putting on our.
I guess they're pulling it from Netflix then.
Yeah.
If you want to continue more of the TV show version.
Yeah, I don't know if like the movies or like the like other shows are going to end up on Peacock. I'm sure they probably will eventually, but I don't know. Like, there might be like some sort of deal where like they're going to be on Netflix for a couple more years, and they'll like eventually transfer over or something.
When it gets, like, really bad with the streaming wars.
Yeah. So, we also got some news this week that there's going to be yet another Walking Dead show. Speaking of, like, driving things into the ground and, like, streaming wars. Tales of the Walking Dead is going to be a 6-episode anthology series. So each episode is going to follow, like, a new story somewhere in the world of Walking Dead. Featuring new and existing characters, so you could see like characters that are already in the universe get their own like kind of like standalone episode or like a brand new character. And it's going to be on AMC and AMC Plus on next summer is when it's going to debut, which I believe is going to be either right after the OG show ends or like right toward the end of the OG show, because they're breaking up Walking Dead into like I think it's like 3 8-episode chunks for the final season. So they just wrapped up like the first chunk. So there's 2 more chunks. I think like next one's gonna start in like February next year. And then there's like Fear the Walking Dead, and then like Walking Dead World Beyond, which was like a 2-season like limited series. And they're talking about like they're still talking about like movies with like Rick coming back.
Wherever he is.
Yeah. He got some picked up by some like weird like some sort of weird organization or something. Oh, and then there's also the Daryl and Carol spinoff show that's coming up too.
They call it the Daryl and Carol.
It doesn't have a name yet. Just like Daryl and Carol are getting their own spinoff show.
See, it's weird when they say that so soon because you know they're gonna make it at the end.
Yeah, like it's like, and it's like there's a cliffhanger with like like this like last group of episodes ended with like a cliffhanger where it's like, oh my god, is Daryl gonna die? It's like, obviously not. Like, also is Car- like Carol's in danger? No. Like,
yeah.
And they also, it's also hilarious too, because like they ended like this episode on like this like big cliffhanger where like it's like, who's gonna die? Is someone gonna die? Like, everyone's in danger. And then it's like they do a trailer for the next episode. It's like, everyone's fine. It's just like,
all
right.
They're all having tea. They're all high fiving.
Yeah. I guess that cliffhanger is pointless.
You gotta appreciate trailers that just have no idea how to be a trailer anymore.
Yeah.
At least Batman 66 show had the right idea of just like having like a break the wall like teaser, make you interested in the next episode, kind of freak you out, like, I don't know what's happening.
Well, it's not like AMC doesn't know how to make trailers. Like, do you remember like the Mad Men trailers? Or were you watching Mad Men when it was live, Chris?
No, I watched like always a season. They
would like the trailers for the next episode of Mad Men would be just like not like just like nonsense out of context clips of just, like Don saying something and just be like, and like Don says something and they cut to like another scene of another person going like, yes, and then it's like, so you have no, it's just, like, it didn't give you any idea of like what the hell the actual like plot of the next episode was gonna be. It's just like random out of context clips. It's like marketing. Smoking. Yes. Mad Men. Next week. I feel like Breaking Bad also had like really good like teasers written in it, like really they teased the episode but they didn't like spoil like any, like if it was a cliffhanger they didn't like dive in and be like, Annie's good. Like, don't worry about it. That character you thought was dead, like here's a trailer showing that he's like literally alive next episode. So that's that robs all attention out of everything.
I don't remember watching a lot of Breaking Bad like promos.
Yeah, I think it depends on like the creator too. Cause I think like Matt Weiner and Vince Gilligan were like very involved in the trailers of their show because they wanted to make sure like that like nothing was like too spoiled and then make sure like it was. I think they had like more control over the trailers. I think The Walking Dead, whoever's running The Walking Dead, Rob, just like doesn't care, or just like lets AMC do it, or like something like they're just like, yeah, whatever. Just
sweet, whatever, just give me the check.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even more Walking Dead is on the way, just like the zombies, that the franchise is never gonna die, it's just gonna shamble around forever. So, last bit of news for this week is that we got some more news about the upcoming Cowboy Bebop adaptation. Well, actually, just Cowboy Bebop in general, and then, like, the live-action series. So, the OG anime is going to be on Netflix, actually, next week, end of next week, on the 21st. You can watch all of the original anime on Netflix.
Makes sense, finally.
Yeah, and then for the live-action show, if you wanted to watch it in Japanese, the OG cast of the anime is actually going to be doing the dub for the Japanese version.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I also feel like the OG cast has loyalty to the original like animation studio, so the fact that it's like, okay, we'll pay to get them to like come back to do this.
It's the first time they've like the entire cast has been united since like 2001, because they last time they were like fully assembled was like for the Cowboy Bebop movie.
2001.
So yeah, so it's been 20 years since the entire like original cast got Japanese cast got back together. So that's pretty cool. So I guess if you want like slightly more authentic experience, if you turn the audio language to Japanese when the live action show comes out, then you'll get the original voices.
That's cool. It's a cool little neat nod. It's not, mm-hmm. like, I mean, it's like one of those, they definitely wanted to like play to the fans. So
yeah,
that's a nice gesture. Let's just see if the show holds up, because some people are pointing things out that, you know, fans like me are just like, you know, why are they doing this? Like, how are they telling the story? How are they jumping? Are they trying to do the whole show in one season? Because they're missing key characters.
Mm-hmm.
Where's Ed? Show me Ed.
So, November 19th is when the live action show starts. So, we'll definitely have to check that out when it comes out and see what's going on with that. And, definitely probably worth, maybe worth binging the original show again, just if it went on Netflix before the live action show comes out.
Oh, totally. That's like a must watch.
Mm-hmm. So, that's it for news this week. So, why don't we jump into show and tell? And, Chris, did you see anything over the last week or so here?
Yes. I watched all of Squid Game.
Okay. The biggest show in Netflix history?
Yeah, apparently. I enjoyed it. It's nothing out of the ordinary if you watch a lot of these types of shows. It doesn't reinvent it. I think it's just well shot.
Mm-hmm.
Like cinematography-wise, like court costuming, characters are fun, but they're very, like, you can, if you've been watching this, you can see the twist coming to some degree. This is Koreans, like, a Korean version of, like, Hunger Games, Battle Royale, Jesus, this is, like, another show, Alice in Borderland.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about just, like, throwing people and making them do wacky things. But unlike most of them, this one is realistic in the, like, the torture. Because the torture is, like, what really is more relatable. Because they're all, like, based on all the death games they play are all based on, like, children's games that people would play in Korea.
Yeah, isn't it? It's, like, Red Light, Green Light, and, like...
Red Light, Green Light, Tug of War, like this, like, kind of, like, cookie, like, picking game that, like, is a very older Korean thing that normally was just, like, a school treat, and, like, you can kind of make it into a game if you can, like, pick out the shape out of, like, the cracker that they make out of sugar. And then the other one is, like, this, like, a hopscotch. And then a marble game where it's like, okay, just like old school, like playing marble games. It could be throwing it. It could be rolling them, you know, just play it, like collect marbles. And then the fifth game, the sixth game is, this is a spoiler because I just spoiled like a lot of the games. But by now, like you've seen memes, you've seen like just like the playground settings and stuff. But then the fifth game is the last game is the actual Squid Game, which I think is like a really like fun game if I was in elementary school to play, but I'm pretty sure American schools would be like, no one's playing Squid Games because it's like very aggressive. The idea is like you are like physically blocking people from trying to reach like this end of like think rugby where it's like you're supposed to like push
or like Red Rover.
It's like Red Rover, but like instead of you plowing through like two closed hands, you literally are like trying to play like a defensive line in like football or rugby of like trying to shove another kid away. And then it's like there's three phases to the game where you're supposed to like hop a one foot to like outmaneuver the other person. And then once you pass like this midpoint, now you can use like any means to like get to the rest of the way, like this defense thing. And then it's like that, okay, not just cool like Harry Potter, but it's like Quidditch, where as long as like one person gets to the center, like I think like I might be missing a step, but like it's like depending on how many players you have, like two, as long as one of the players can get to the end, like the other team wins, and the other team has to play like defensively to like shove, protect like the center. So I think that's how it is. I'm not quite sure, but it makes sense where it's like you can't get anyone in this end circle and you're allowed to just like everyone use whatever means necessary to like shove people out of the way. And I know if this game was like in America, this would just be like banned. It's just like you can't play this game in schools and then expect to be friends right after. Even Red Rover was like kind of banned in my school.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think people were just like picking, like just clotheslining people or just absolutely destroying people's hands.
Mm.
So not always the best game to play, but you know, in in Korea, they love their physical activity, so it makes sense. But anyway, Squid Game. It's all about these people who are financially, like, in debt. And, like, the game isn't, like, selectively picking people who are just, like, random. Like, you have to be sort of down on your luck, and then the participants are given an insane chance to win. Like, I think the equivalent of, like, $40,000? It doesn't sound crazy, but, like, you know, that's still a lot of money. I think in like, Korea, it's like 400 billion, like, or something like that, like 400 million or 4 billion, but it just equivalent becomes like 40 million US dollars. Still a lot of money. And it's like tax free, just like ends up being yours. So a lot of them play the game. And all these characters kind of go through. You don't see all like 456 characters, but you get like a good amount of idea of everyone's kind of like, you know, plays a role. They fall into like some sort of like societal form. And then the one guy who we follow, I just forget his name. It's like in Korean, I'm not gonna butcher it. But he like the first episode's really dedicated to like why he needs to be in here, why he needs to win, and it's like he's understandable, but the show kind of edges on that whole thing where you're not there to survive. Actually, you can it has this really cool rule which makes sense, where it's like, yeah, if everyone quits playing the game, like, the games are over. Like, you can leave. But that's the point. It's like, everyone has that choice, and every time they play a game, they're all like, oh, I want to leave, this sucks. And they go like, no, we really need the money. Like, go back in the game. But my only gripe about the show is, like, they always do that cliche thing where the hero is just like, I'm better than this money. But it's like, okay, but you still need this money. Like, you really need... Everyone here is not, like... Everyone on the same financial footing, where, like, they are screwed if they, like, don't have this money. Like, they're gonna get into huge problems. And it's, like... That's like, the sad fact about the characters. Like, they really kind of put that story really well, where everyone makes sense to why they're playing these death games. So when they start getting, like, this pity party... My, like, financial emotional debt right now is just like, no, like, stay here. Like, even if you die in here, like, the perks of you dying are still pretty good. Like, if you die, money goes to your family.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like some characters, like, they don't have anyone. I get why, like, that doesn't make sense for them. Other characters are like, no, like, I, you know, like, it sucks, but, like, it makes more sense. So I thought of it in a very moral, like, not moral way. I thought in a very, like, financial gain thing. I'm like, yeah, play the game. A lot of people aren't with me on that opinion, but I'm just thinking, like, it's not like you're here because you're survival. Like, you're going to play death games. Like, they keep really beating to the fact that these are all optional death games. And then the characters always do this freak out where it's like, I didn't know it would be like this. It's like, what did you think? And it's funny because all the characters who are, like, all for it are all, like, are not doing well. You know, the characters who, like, really need to be there, who are just like, I'll do anything to win. You know, they're kind of, like, being picked off easily. Meanwhile, our main hero, I hate him to some degree because it's supposed to be, like, he's very, like, not likable. So they do a really good job of really not making him likable because he's just really bad with money. And then that's the problem. And he's, like, he's got a good heart, but just bad with money. And he's not good at making decisions. So these games change him to be, like, a better person to some degree. But I don't know. I still was just, like, you're surprised this death game has death? You know, like, that's... You'll see, if you're watching the show, Zach, you'll probably be saying that, too. Like, you're surprised. Why are you, like, I get, like, the first game is shocking because, you know, you didn't understand anything, the rules. They really didn't explain, like, the death penalty, you know, all that. So I get the first game's always the most shocking. But after game four, like, you got to get over it. You know what I mean? Like every game they're shocked. That's the most annoying part. But I get it. Like, you know, it's supposed to show that, like, not everyone's, like, evil like me when it comes to death games. But at least, like, in other kind of battle royale type shows, everyone's fighting for survival. So it's like there's no financial gain. They're doing it to, like, because if they don't, like, they're going to die. And then it's like you signed and then you had no choice but to play this game. You know, like, I get that reason. But other shows make more sense where it's like, in this one, it's like really just like about human greed. And it's like, how far can you like let your greed go? But it's like, no, keep going. Like you're halfway through it. Like, why are you having second thoughts? Like, you're going to lose because you're like backing out at this point. So you'll be screaming. I was screaming at that a lot watching the show. And I was like, come on, people. Like, I get like a lot of the characters, like they're just like, oh, I owe money. Like, I just want to be rich. And it's like, they didn't think it'd be this bad. But yeah, the show does a really good job of being like, this is brutal. Like, this feels like you shoved a person off a cliff, and it's like, you did this, you know? So just say screw it. After the second or third game, like, you're just in it, you know? Like, and it has this really sick Asian humor about it where it's like, yeah, no one's going to know you did this. Like, you know, these secret games are so well done and organized. It's not like you can tell someone and they're going to believe you. So just go nuts, you know, like, what's the worst is going to happen? You know, you have a life of regret. Oh, I know that sucks. But like, you'll never worry about money or work ever again. It's like, you know what I mean? Like they present it in a way where it made sense, especially when the people they recruit are not likable. So it's like, why are you having a change of heart at this moment? So, yeah, I recommend it. I'm trying not to spoil it because I feel like you have to get the emotional impact, you have to watch it. I'm really covering the broad review of just saying I watched so many of these shows, so that's why I'm very jaded towards like these type of scenarios, and I saw a few of them coming. But there's a few clever twists. There's a lot of cool, like, okay, this is something where if you've really been paying attention, you could see coming, but if you're just enjoying the show and not thinking, like, you'll be genuinely surprised. And a lot of the kills are very visceral. Like, they're not super CGI'd and, like, you know, kind of like a Sam Raimi kind of way. They're very, like, grindhouse horror. Like, these people bleed in different colors of red, so, like, to show the oxidation in the blood. Like, they were good. That's what I'm saying. Like, they did a good job of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another show I watched was, like, Alice in Borderland, which is probably the most recent similar show like this, where they add in a little bit of fantastical elements to the show, and that's what kind of makes it, like, more of an anime, you know, like, in a more cartoony sense, and there's, like, sort of fantasy elements that, like, it doesn't quite make sense why these people have, like, inherent just martial art abilities or whatever. But in this show, it's like, no, they're just average people. Like, if some guy, like, choked on his food, like, you know, that could kill him in, like, the show. It's like, oh, okay, that's, like, a real threat. Or, like, slipped in the bathroom. You know what I mean? Like, there's a sense of, like, realism that I like about it. Again, the OG version of this is Battle Royale, just a bunch of teens and weapons and going at each other, which I'm surprised they haven't, done a TV show adaptation of that yet. I know the original writer, like, he is not credited a lot, but he definitely deserves it. And definitely you can't watch Squid Games without knowing Battle Royale. And I will campaign that people see Battle Royale right after Squid Games. I think a lot of people did. They're like, hey, you just finished Squid Games. You just got this, like, new itch you never knew you needed, you had. And, like, you want to watch more, like, Asian people killing each other for money? Watch Battle Royale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, it's good. Because it's like, this is how you get into Asian horror. I feel like that's a great way. Korean horror is a very grounded horror compared to Japanese horror, or I don't know. Some Japanese horror is pretty realistic. I'm not going to say that. It's just different. But Korean horror lately has been very, you know, has been very good in the sense where it is just like, it tickles all the right parts of your brain where it doesn't look like you are watching like a CGI blob. Unless you're watching like The Host or like a zombie movie, like Train to Busan.
Mm-hmm.
But other like psychological horror things, Korean movies do really well. So I definitely, definitely recommend the show. And if you're at that level of watching a lot of these shows, maybe you have the same opinion as me. If you're a first timer, like, buckle up. This is your first Battle Royale show because you're going straight into like a top tier level. But yeah, it's I think like 13 episodes. I watched it over like 2.5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, blew through them. That's most of what I watch.
Yeah, I'm gonna get to it. If I get to it at some point, just because it's like it's so huge. Like
it is.
So you gotta watch it at some point.
Just it's like a cultural revolution to watch it. But I definitely recommend like watching it in a block. Like the first episode doesn't quite get you, like watch this, like why you don't watch the first two episodes like together, because the first episode legit ends in a like haha, like you thought it was one thing but it's another episode, but then it's like, oh okay, we'll get back on track, you know, like it plays with you in a twist, which I appreciate it. And there's no way of explaining that besides watch the first episode. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't like the first, again, if you don't like the first two episodes, like you're gonna hate watching for the rest. But yeah, what about you, Zach? What have you been watching?
Well, so like I teased at the beginning of the episode, I saw No Time to Die, which is the 25th Bond movie overall and the fifth and final Daniel Craig movie. Which it's crazy. Like Daniel Craig has been Bond for 15 years. It seems like
way longer.
Yeah, way longer or way less, depending on like how you think time works. But yeah, Casino Royale was 2006. When that first came out, and then I think it's been 6 years since Spectre came out.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, because there's been a huge gap between like Spectre and this one. Yeah, Spectre is 2015, so yeah, it's been 6 years since a Bond movie. And No Time to Die definitely picks up after Spectre. I think if you forgot everything that happened in Spectre, you might need to like at least like read Wikipedia or like watch some sort of like recap video or something, or just watch it again, even though it's not that great or it's like very up and down. But yeah, because like a lot of the stuff that the setup in Spectre like is like the like driving force of this one, especially like the like Madeline Swan Bond like romance, like if you like that's like the entire like dramatic thrust of this movie is like you have to like buy into like that like the, like that they're like
they're madly like, in love or like, just, for some
yeah
reason.
Like just like super like just like super madly in love, and like this is like the woman that Bond would like give up everything for,
which he's trying to give up his career a few times.
Yeah, which yeah, I mean I bought into that enough for the, like just to, like to enjoy the movie, but like least I do is like no Eva Green, like
no
like,
mention.
When the movie kicks off, they are like having this like romantic like journey across Italy and like Europe and stuff. They end up in like this like Italian town, this like beautiful Italian like mountain town called Matera. But that you find out that's where like Vespa is buried, and then Madeline's like, oh, you need to go like forgive Vespa at her grave, and then we can have our future together with like free of like regret and secrets and
wait, he hasn't done that? I thought he did.
No. I don't know, like she like well like so Madeline has a secret which is like tied to like Rami Malek, like Safin, which she's like keeping it on, like close to her chest, and then like she's like, well, if you go like forgive Vespa, and then I'll tell you all my secrets. But then Bond goes to like the like Vespa's like tomb, and then it blows up, and there's like a Spectre card next to it. And then like Spectre like assassins are attacking him, so he's like, so he basically thinks that like, oh, this is like Vespa 2.0 again, like Madeline's betrayed me to Spectre, and like I'm being betrayed again. So there's a whole like awesome opening action sequence where like they really like you really get to see like the DB5, like the Aston Martin, just like really like all it's capable of, like they use all like the classic gadgets in it. It's like super awesome, this classic Bond thing where it's like Bond's using like the smoke screen, like the tire popper, like caltrop things, and like the machine guns and stuff. So yeah, it's this super awesome opening sequence, and then like he basically is like, you betrayed me, we're done, you'll never see me again, and like cuts like 5 years later.
What?
And then there is like this bioweapon that MI6 was secretly like, well, like M was secretly having this like lab work on, gets stolen, And Bondsman retired, but then like Felix shows up, and like, is like, hey, when I help the CIA like find this like scientist that like left and like may have like included like this bioweapon that like got stolen.
But he has no connection. There's no one else to get. And then is he not a double O anymore?
So he retired from MI6. Like they basically replaced him with Lashana Lynch. She's like the new like top 00.
Right.
So Bond like initially is
so
like
why get him?
Helps with,
there's definitely like a hint why, but that doesn't indicate, you know, it's not like we need to get you because of reasons. It's like,
well, I think it's also because they're brothers. They're brothers in espionage. Like Felix trusted like James above anyone. So.
All right. What a weird.
But this bioweapon got stolen. It's programmable so that you can like program it to like kill certain people, and then like if you get infected by like what the virus, like
it stays targeted thing.
It stays in your system, and then it could be activated like later on. Like if someone decides like.
Yeah, it's called Foxdot from Metal Gear Solid. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's basically I'm programming it to like kill James Bond and all of his like relatives. Right. Yeah.
Well, most of his relatives are dead and.
Yeah, well, you find out that like Rami Malek, like Safin, like he's behind everything, which the movie is like weirdly like plays that like as like a mystery of like who's the person behind this. And it's like, well, we saw the trailer, it's Rami Malek, like you don't have to hide it.
Like, just, and I was so like, that's the mystery, because we
that's kind of like a frustrating part of the movie. Is like they spend so much time like keeping like Rami Malek like in the shadows, and not like, which also like really doesn't help. Like I feel like he's not a great, like he's good in the role, but he doesn't have enough time to like really like have an impact as a villain, like because they keep him away. Like he's in the background for so long that by the time you actually get to see him, like he starts doing villain stuff, it's like, okay, like
it's,
he's just like
the Quantum thing where they hear about it, they kind of spoil it, you know, the who is in charge, but then Bond has to kind of catch up, but by then you just don't care anymore.
And it's also weird too, because like you have like this movie is 2 hours and 43 minutes, and like it's like weird that like Ryan, like the main villain is like not in it for like a huge chunk of it, and you have all that you have all that time for like plot and like you could have like villain setups and stuff, but like yeah, he's like Ryan Malek doesn't really factor into like the last hour, like last like third of the movie. And then by the time you get to that, like him, it's like, it's just like he didn't have enough time to like really get like established. It's like he just comes across as kind of like just like a generic, like he's a solid but not great Bond villain. Like he, and his plot is like kind of like generic. Well, it's like it starts out like he wants revenge, but then it morphs and they like tack on this like he wants revenge, but also like he like for some reason also is just gonna like kill a bunch of people on Earth with this virus for reasons. Because it's like, oh, he's getting this virus for a specific reason, and then it's like, and also like he like got DNA like of like a bunch of other people, so he's gonna kill all those people too for whatever reason, because he's like nihilist or whatever, something, I don't know.
He's just Rick.
Yeah.
Like nothing makes.
Yeah.
Like life means meaningless. Like if you can't do science, you shouldn't live at all.
Yeah, if it was just a revenge, like his revenge plot, that would have been a solid like sensical plot. But then like they just tack on like, because they have to tack on like the like world domination threat to it too. So it's like it definitely feels tacked on. It's like he's like, oh, and he also stole like DNA, like it's such a throwaway, like when they actually reveal like the full scope of the plot, like someone's like, I think like Moneypenny or someone's just like, oh yeah, there's a bunch of like DNA banks that got stolen, like that is stolen from them. It's,
he like, stole like, you know, ancestry.com results.
yeah so that's probably one of the biggest flaws of is like the villain is like not that great. Even though like Ryan Max is on screen, he's good, but like he's not on screen enough to like be a good be an impactful villain. And I feel like the movie also like thinks he's like much bigger threat and like a much more like impactful villain than like the audience thinks, probably, because like and then and like they also like this whole like they also like try to, even though it's like right from the beginning of the movie, like you know what exactly what's happening, but like they try to like hide or like make it like also like a reveal or mystery of like his like ties to Madeline, where it's like he like attacked, like he attacked like her like childhood home when she was like a little girl and like killed her mother.
Wait, how old is he then?
Which that's also weird because it's like he like Madeline was like a 10 or 11 year old girl when like he attacked them, but then like Rami Malek is like not old at all. So it's like how, well, because they don't show his face in like the opening, like the very very opening of the movie is like this flashback where it's like Rami Malek and like that like weird like creepy doll mask shows up and like kills like Madeline's mother.
So, and also looking
for Mr. White, obviously, because Mr. White is her father, and like that's always, it's like one of the like overarching things of the whole, like this whole Craig era was like Mr. White was like always tied to something. But yes, yeah, so they never show who's behind the mask, so I guess you could like kind of like explain that way, like, oh, he's like, he was way younger. If you took that mask off, he'd be like a way younger person, and then
like a 17 year old kid.
That also doesn't really make sense either.
See, like, the thing, Rami Malek is not, like, age-appropriate yet. You know, he looks very, even now, he looks very young. So unless he was, like, a psycho, like, 17-year-old killer, I'm trying to understand how he made it up his way, like, to Bond-level killer, scientist, evil genius. Mm-hmm. I think that's just, like, very...
And then he also has, like, at the end, he also gets, like, the traditional like island lair. He's this whole like island that man has to like infiltrate.
It's what you do.
Yeah,
I guess you upgrade. You just every few years you're just moving up a rank. Island lair.
Yeah.
Final. One of the final stages.
Yeah. So I think the length is definitely like a flaw. It's never like unbearably boring or like I'm like you want to kill yourself watching it, but like it's like whenever you see it, you're like, if you haven't seen it yet, it's like you're definitely gonna be like, wow, this is long. I just realized how long this is. Like, I've been here for like a while and we still have a while to go, so because there's definitely a lot of downtime. There's a lot of like dramatic relationship downtime at points too.
Well, okay, now, before we get too far, like, is it worth seeing it for the cinematic shots in theater?
I mean, yeah, it does, like, I mean, Cary Fukunaga directed it. I mean, he's an amazing director. Like, there's definitely, like, some, like, absolutely amazing shots, and, like, a bunch of the action overall is pretty fantastic. And, like, there's, like, tons of great action sequences. There's, like, there's a scene where, like, after, like, Felix, like, recruits Bond to, like, go help the CIA, he has the Cuba. And then he teams up with Ana de Armas, who is like one of like Felix's like CIA assets, and they have there's this whole like probably the best action sequence of the whole movie is like this, like they like infiltrate like this Spectre party, and then there's this whole like huge action sequence at the party. But like Ana de Armas is like so much fun because she's like this like she's like fresh out of training, so she's like I had 3 weeks of training before I got this mission. And the bot's like, all right, like, okay. But it's cool because, like, she actually, like, it's not like she's, like, a she can't do anything. Like, she's, like, is able to, like, kick ass and stuff. But she's, like, also, like, super nervous and super excited and, like, just, like, constantly, like, just, like, chattering and be like, oh, man, this is so much fun. It's my first mission.
I think, is she excited because Bond's there? Like, he's a legend or...
Well, I think it's just in the general, she's like, it's like, yeah, it's like my first mission. I get to like wear a fancy dress and punch people and shoot guns and stuff. It's fun.
Wow. Okay.
But yeah, it's just, yeah, she and Bond have like such, they have like, it's like, they're like on the radio with each other the whole time. And they're like, it's like great, like, bicker, like kind of like back and forth banter and stuff. And I think pretty much like, they made Knives Out, and then I think Daniel Craig like went to like the like Bond producers, like he's like get Ana de Armas in this movie because she's great. So they basically wrote a character for her.
Does she play a bigger role, or that's like
it's just that one scene, and then she's like, all right, bye, like that was fun, James. I'm gonna have to do like another thing now, bye. And then there's like a kind of like this, there's another action sequence where it's in this foggy forest. It's like a much more like slower paced action sequence than you normally get with like a Bond movie, where it's like Bond has like used like he's like setting up like traps, and like you like get to see like his like strategic thinking, because he has like deal with like these like motorcyclists and like trucks, and like he only has his pistol, so he has to like, figure out a way to like stop these guys like in this like fog shrouded forest with like just like stuff that's around. And there's also like a toward the end there's like this like kind of one shot one take sequence that's like definitely like if you saw like True Detective, because that's like what like Cary Fukunaga on the map is like that like I think was episode 3 of season 1 of True Detective, like that one shot sequence where like it's like the drug raid sequence. Like it's another one of like those like Cary Fukunaga like one shot like one take sequences where like Bond's like he's going up things, you follow him all the way up this like stairwell of this like old like Soviet like missile tower, and he's like fighting guys all the way up, and it also is like a great send off for Daniel Craig. Like he actually gets like a proper send off. It's like I was thinking about it after I got out of the movie. It's like none of the other Bond actors like really got like a send off. Like they all just kind of like rode the is it the like franchise like went off the rails under them, and they just like ended like abruptly. Like I mean, like Pierce Brosnan, like his last movie was Die Another Day, so it's just like all right, that was not probably one of the worst movies ever made. So,
yeah, and that's not really a send off because it just kind of ends.
No one got like a like send off. Like we're like we know this is the last one. We're gonna really make it play tribute to like his like this actor's time as Bond, and like really like give him like a good like send off. Like everyone else kind of just rode the train off the tracks. Like Sean Connery had like, I mean, it's either like you could argue it's either Diamonds Are Forever or Never Say Never Again, even though Never Say Never Again was not an official Bond movie, but that was like his like last Bond movie. Either of those are like the best Bond movies. Like Roger Moore had like A View to a Kill. I mean, Timothy Dalton just had the franchise like yanked away from him because of like lawsuits and like people were on board with like the like more serious tone. And then obviously George Lazenby just like self-destructed.
Yep. Yeah, so, a lot of people did. Yeah, you're right. Like, the more you list it down, it's like this super like difficult process of getting someone to complete like a story arc.
Yeah. Yeah. This like No Time to Die wraps up all loose ends. It definitely wraps up and like sends Daniel Craig off on like a high note. So if you're a fan of Daniel Craig, I mean, it's definitely worth watching. I would put it right smack in the middle. Like, it's not as good as Casino Royale or Skyfall, but it's definitely better than Spectre and Quantum of Solace. So it's like right smack in the middle of like the Craig era. You just have to designate like a big chunk of your day to see it, just because of how long it is. But so I saw that, and then actually speaking of like James Bondian villain plots, I also finally saw The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard.
Oh, okay.
Which I think you saw like earlier this summer, Chris.
I did. I saw it in a way. I enjoyed it, but it's very like divisive.
I definitely it's not as good as the first one. I think the first one's definitely much better. Like I think the action was better than the first one. Like the like kind of like the Samuel Jackson, Ryan Reynolds, like dynamic was like more fresher in that one. It's kind of like the same. This one's more the same, and it kind of like and like, but also this like make the like villain plot is just ramped up to like a ridiculous degree. Like, cause the first one was just like we have to get Samuel Jackson to like The Hague so he can testify in this case, and then like this one's like Antonio Banderas is gonna blow up the internet or something or whatever the hell he's gonna use that blow up Europe's internet.
Yeah, Greece is gonna be like the number one.
Yeah, he's gonna blow up Europe so that Greece like is like the dominating force in like Europe, because the EU like is like putting sanctions on them.
Yeah, what Greek, a weird plan.
Greek President Antonio Banderas.
What did you think? Like, didn't he need to be Greek? Because I didn't think he needed to be Greek.
Isn't there a Greek actor?
There's so many other actors they could have.
Isn't there someone who's Greek that could like be the over the top villain? I mean, I love Antonio Banderas, but like, it's
why
such a weird, like,
be a Spaniard or something? Why is he Greek?
It's such a weird life. Like, a Greek accent is the same as a Spanish accent, right? No one cares. Like, that's the same thing.
Well, apparently people agree because, you know, this is how we get it.
Yeah. So that was like ridiculous. Like that was such a ridiculous like escalation of just like, we have to get this. We have to like get this one guy to like one place in time, and then it's like the fate of the entire world rests on like these like three characters.
What did you think about like there's so many side plots that happen?
Yeah. Well, I definitely wish we had more of like Frank Grillo, like his like weird like Boston interval agents.
Frank Grillo is just
I couldn't figure out what the hell his like backstory was, because like he's an Interpol agent, but then he hates Europe and he wants to go back to Boston.
But he's oddly good at his job.
It's like, was he Interpol in Boston? Or because I thought he was like a cop or something at first, and then he's like, no, he's Interpol, but he just hates Europe and like wants to like get like be rid of Interpol as soon as he can.
He wants to become like a beat cop in Boston, but he's done so well in Europe. But
yeah,
what did he do to get
his to his punishment was to be sent to Europe, I guess, or something. Like, he was like, he got kicked out of Boston or wherever the hell he was, like the U.S. before, wherever he was stationed in the U.S. before, and then his like punishment was like go to Europe.
I know, like, such a weird. Like, he got fired, but, like, he got demoted, but then...
Transferred to, like, another, like, it's like if you got transferred to, like, another, like, station or something, if you're a cop. Like, it's like, oh, you gotta go, like, precinct 3 now or something, because you did something, you screwed up here, like...
It's a sweet upgrade in that sense, where he gets to, like, be in that area.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's, like, very minuscule, because the movie pays no attention to that.
Yeah. And like he sets up like oh yeah, you're working for me now, you have to like go like do this whole like scheme of like to like stop Antonio Banderas, and then like he just disappears for like the rest of the movie almost until like the end.
Yeah, and then like I like how he has to work with like his partner who just doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty fun.
And then also, like, Morgan Freeman is right around his dad.
Surprise, right?
Yes, that was pretty fun.
First of all, I didn't know he was in the movie. And then second of all, you don't know that's his father. And it's, like, this weird story between them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was like, I didn't want to spoil what he does, but he's in it. And he's not featured on posters or anything.
He is on the poster. One of the posters. Yeah, he's on there.
Jesus, I did not expect that pass. And it's like, it's definitely like as the movie was, like, as they got to a sequel, they're like, what do we do? Like, how do we escalate this?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I did like Tom Hopper is like the like super famous bodyguard that's like Ryan Reynolds is like jealous of and like his rival, but then Tom Hopper doesn't know who the hell Ryan Reynolds is.
Yep. I like the different types of fantasies that happen in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, like, dream sequencing stuff that I thought was pretty fun.
Yeah, it opens with, like, the dream sequence.
I also think, like, the weird car driving where it's, like, he thought he was doing, like, an excellent driving, and it's, like,
yes,
he
that
does
was,
none
that,
of that.
Yeah, that was like, one of the best jokes of the movie, where it's like, this huge, like action sequence, like, a precision drive, and then, like, Tom Hopper's, like, wow, this guy could drive. And then he's like, passed out on the steering wheel. And then, like, Samuel Jackson drives horribly. Like, yep. Just, like, throws him down a staircase.
So, yeah, it's got, like, fun charm to it. Like, when the movie knows, like, the awareness of it, it's really fun. When it tries to do something a little different, it gets weird.
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't know what it's doing. Like, the love story between Salma Hayek and Antonio Banderas, they try to rekindle that, and there's, like, this big, like, betrayal, and then, like, we're betraying each other.
Yeah, I enjoyed that as, like, a, like, I wish they had been more meta about it, and, like, thrown out, like, just, like, like Selma Hayek was like, oh, he was a desperado back in the day or something. Just like some sort of like reference some to like El Mariachi. Like, yeah.
But they didn't really do that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely, and if you like the first one, and you probably like this one too, I think this was definitely like slightly diminishing returns compared to the first one. Like the first one's like definitely a much better movie, but this one's still fun, still some fun stuff going on.
I agree.
Like still a fun dynamic between like the main trio, especially like there's much more Selma Hayek in it. Like she like it's Samuel Jackson like a great dynamic, and like just her just like cursing everyone all constantly and going crazy on people like it's fun.
The what do you think about the whole like baby part? Because that was like I get it, but it was a little much for me.
Yeah, well, the real the end where it's like, oh, we adopted you. Like,
yeah, that's a fun. That was fun.
Yeah. But yeah. So I saw that. I also saw The Invisible Man, the original. Like 1930, when did that come out? 33 movie. Because I got sent the new Universal Classic Monsters Icons of Horror collection, which is the it's a new 4K. The first time Dracula, Frankenstein, the Wolfman, and the Invisible Man have been on 4K. I watched some of like all of them, but I never actually saw like The Invisible Man, or like I've only saw clips of The Invisible Man before. So I finally watched that one all the way through, which it's definitely a deeper cut Universal Monster movie. Like I don't like Invisible Man doesn't come up as much as like Creature or like Mummy or like Frankenstein or Dracula or any of the Pride of Frankenstein. Like those, like it you have to be like it's to be like a much like more like extensive collection or like a much like you have to like dive deeper into like the like 30s Universal collection to like get to like Invisible Man. But it's definitely a fun movie. Some like very like groundbreaking effects for time where like all the like invisible stuff, like nobody'd ever seen that before really, I don't think.
No one's like shit on strings.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely some fun like there's like a scene where like he is like only has a shirt on and is like running around like cackling at people. It's like it's a ghost shirt, just like running around yelling at people. Which it's also like crazy because like Claude Rains like the Invisible Man, like he switches from like calm to like insane like a drop of a hat. Like he'll just be like talking normally and, like or like threatening people kind of calmly and just like start like cackling like a madman, like running around the room throwing things at people. So it's just like, and also like his like plot is kind of like he wants to he wants to like take over the world he's gonna use like invisible powers to like take over the world, like kill people in power, like basically like, take over, like threaten people and like take over the world somehow.
Okay.
And then, but then it's definitely a very like loose plot. Like things just sort of happen. Like it's just he never really seems like he's like working on like whatever his plan is. And then like it's just like the police are like. He goes like on the run from the police for like most of the movie, and so that's the thing. I'm just like, the, like you hear like radio reports of like the Invisible Man running around like causing at one point like the biggest thing he does is like he derails a train at one point and like kills a bunch of people.
Wait,
and then like those people off cliffs. Like yeah, he's like his plan is like he wants to take over the world through like a reign of terror because he's invisible and like no one can stop him, and then like he just does like random like acts of like destruction or like random like mischief. And then it's like specific like the big thing like the last half of the movie is like this one of, because he used to be like Claude Rains like was like a assistant to, like this doctor, and that's how he like came up with like the formula for like the invisibility. But then like the other partner, he goes to him first to be like, you're gonna help me like with my plan, and then like then that guy Kemp like turns him into the police. So then like the Invisible Man's like, well, I'm gonna come back and kill you at 10 o'clock tomorrow, like in a week or something. And then so like that's like the whole like rest of the movie's like they're trying to like stop him before he like kills this guy at like a specific time.
I mean, if they delay it, it's just like, ah, I won't do it at all.
Yeah. And then like when the cop, when the police try to stop him, like it's like this like wacky, like he's like pushing them over, throwing stuff at them or like knocking them out and stuff. So it's a weird mix of like he at one point he derails a train, but also he's just like causing like wacky mischief. So
he's just like stealing candy and shit.
Yeah, it's also like I'm surprised they actually mention it, but like you have to realize like when he's like fully invisible, he's also naked. Cause like yeah, close yeah. here, so it's like, so he's just running around like stark naked, invisible, like, which they actually mentioned that one. He's like, it's cold out when you're stark naked, or so.
Ooh, risque.
That feels like risque for like the 30s, but, yeah, definitely, like a bit like a landmark for like special effects and like a solid like Universal monster movie, It's kind. I feel like it's kind of weird, like addition to like that that new set, because it's like you would think like they would put like the Mummy or like Bride of Frankenstein or something in like that set if you're like doing like this like first time ever in 4K, like you would get like more of like a one of the bigger ones on there, or have more than like four on there. I don't know what like the like 4K costs are, or like what the, like what the decision was to, like put like Invisible Man on there instead over like the Mummy or like one of those other ones. But I think the set, that 4K set, is worth checking out if you really want like the highest quality you could possibly get for like those movies. But there's also like if you care about like 4K, but Blu-ray's fine. I think there's a bunch of like other like Blu-ray sets to look into. Like there's like a 30 collection movie collection on Blu-ray that's like obviously gives like six times the movies that this one has. And then there's also like I think specific like collections for specific monsters. So if you're like a like big like Dracula fan, like there's like a Blu-ray set that is like all the Dracula movies. So I think you gotta look at what this set has compared to like the other ones. I think a bunch of the special features on this 4K set are also like carryovers from like other collections and like even like DVD special features, because like some of the special features like look like they're like pulled from a DVD. Like it's like compared to like crisp 4K of like the movies, you watch these like special features, it's like taped off like a TV show from like the 90s or something. It's like really
Ooh,
weird.
I thought it'd be up-res and all this to make
yeah it some of the special features are not up-res, or it's like they just ripped them right off a DVD or something. They look rough. But the actual movies themselves are like gorgeous 4K. Like, although it's weird because like they also have like it uses like HDR and all that stuff too, but they're black and white, so it's not really like what is HDR doing? I guess like making like the blacks blacker maybe or something, but like there's no color to like enhance or anything, so it's like it's kind of like a weird like buzz. It's more like a buzzword for the than anything else on this one. It's like HDR 4K.
That makes sense. Where it's just like everything to get people to buy it, to not be like super old school.
Yeah,
but then it's like, haha, it tricks you.
Yeah, I don't think it's that high of a step up above the Blu-ray, just because it's a black and white movie, and the Blu-ray version of these already looks pretty great. So if you have to have the 4K, I would check out that new set. But like if you want like more movies, for slightly less quality, quality wise, then I would check out some of those other ones. There's definitely like a 30 film collection that came out like a couple years ago that has like all the movies on the set plus like the Mummy plus like all a bunch of other ones on there, creatures on there, like Bride of Frankenstein on there. So like, if you want like more movies, I would check out that one. But yeah, so I saw that. And the last thing I saw is the new Legends of the Hidden Temple on the CW. They rebooted that.
Is it based on a show or is it live as a reality show?
It's a game show again. They basically updated the 90s Nickelodeon show, but now it's like adults doing it, because they're trying to appeal to like if you're a 90s kid, now they're trying to appeal to the adults that watch it as kids, now that they're like competing in as adults. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. It's such they drag it out to it's a full like hour show, and it's dragged out so much. It's also like it seems like it has no budget, because like all the challenges are like so like terrible looking and stupid. Which, I mean, the original show was like that too, but like they hit it. It was like in the veneer of like Nickelodeon Studios, and it was '90s, and like the actual temple set was like so cool that like it kind of like helped everything like seem like better than it was, and like Kirk Fogg was there to like push things along too, which I think Cristela Alonso hosted the new show. She's like a like comedian. She's done a bunch of stuff, but yeah, it's like so they basically do four. It's four teams now to start with, and they do like the moat game, which the original show they had push something across the water, like the pool in the set. Now they have like an actual like giant like thing of water, like a body of water they made. But it's like this like multi-step thing, and I think probably the worst thing about this reboot is that they're constantly cutting back to like the contestants like interview. So it's like they have like reality show interviews now with the contestants like commenting on everything, and they're all like making horrible like jokes or like trying to be like, the first challenge is like they have like hit a slingshot and like hit like a bird, like this like bird like thing off a stand, like figure out like this puzzle. It's terrible, like multi-step. They're basically all, it's basically all like Survivor challenges now. They basically made all the challenges like Survivor.
Oh, like it's not like themed. It's just more like physical challenges that
it's themed, but it's they're like more like elaborate, I guess, to like drag out the like runtime of the show. Because like I mean the original show was like so efficient. It was just like boat challenge, like steps of knowledge, like three temple games, temple run. 22 minutes, that's it. Like, get the next group of kids in here. Because, like, the original show filmed, like, God knows how many shows in a day. Like,
I think it was, like, three or four.
I think it was more than that. I think it filmed, like, at least, like, five or six shows every day or something. They just cranked them out just, like, as quick as they could.
I did go to one as a kid.
Yeah.
I sat through, like, one taping.
Yeah.
It's okay. Like, you are watching this, and it's, like, a lot of downtime, but not as much as I thought. Plus, I was a kid, so a small amount of downtime is, like, a lot of downtime. And I think at the end, you get to, like, walk around the set a little bit.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the new one, so they do the temple, so the moat challenge, and it takes forever. And then they do the steps of knowledge again, and they get down two teams, and then they do, like, temple games, but it's like also like super dragged out, terrible, like it's like multi-step like challenge that like you gotta like one of them was like in the first episode was like you have to like knock these like water balloons or something, or like fireflies quote unquote off this tree, and like not use your, you have to use these like giant poles, like lift them up and put them in a bucket, and then you have to like roll it, like get into like this like tube and roll yourself along this track, and then like climb up this like obstacle course thing, and then like then throw knives at like this like stack of like blocks, and it's all it's all tied to like some sort of like fake like Mayan myth that like, and they also, I mean, the only good thing about it is that they do have like Olmec back, and like Dee Bradley Baker is voicing Olmec again.
Oh,
and,
cool.
and he looks exactly, it's exactly the same as like the original show. Like, he looks exactly the same and sounds exactly the same. But they, like, drag out the story of the legend through the whole show. And it's terrible. And then they try to, like, tie it into, like, all the challenges and stuff. And it's so stupid. And then, they do the temple run. And the temple is sort of, I guess the temple is sort of, it's kind of cool. They added some new, like they kind of made it more mature because it's like adults now doing it, so now it's like they have a room where like you have to like put your hand in like these like corpses and like rip out a heart and then like put the heart into the wall and stuff, and like there's like a giant like spider web room you have to climb up now. But I mean, just the length of it is, it's so dragged out, and then just like the contestants are all super annoying, and you just like listen to them constantly like doing interviews, and they'd be like making terrible puns and jokes about like their performance, or being like, oh man, we did that, and like our team, we're gonna smoke the other teams because we're the Purple Parrots. Oh yeah. Like, it's like, oh my god,
I hope you lose.
Yes, please die. Like, And they're all like, they're all, they got like, just like all the, it's like, we're like the parents on like the first episode were like, we're the metal dads. We're in a heavy metal band, but we're also dads. Yeah. And it's just like, oh my God, please die. I hope you all drown in the moats. So, yeah, I'm not gonna watch anymore. I think it had horrible ratings. Like, I think the ratings were like, it was like 282,000 people watched it whenever it aired, like Sunday or Monday. So, probably gonna be canceled soon if it keeps up that rating. So, I would just stick to, if you have Pluto TV. I'm not sure exactly when it airs, but I think it's like more toward like 4 or 5 o'clock every day. There's like a Nickelodeon tween channel, and they show like Legend of Hidden Temple, the original one, all the time. So I would say just search Pluto TV for the original one. Like, don't. And I think it's also on, I think the whole show is on Paramount Plus too. So if you have Paramount Plus, I would just like watch the original there and like not deal with that, not deal with this new one. It feels like people were just like old executives just like, hey, what are these 90s kids like? They had like that Legend of Temple show, right? Bring that back. Like, well, actually, I think the whole problem stems because it was like, I think this is originally a Quibi show. And then Quibi like obviously died a horrible death, and then like the CW was like, we'll pick that up.
We have no shame. Give that to us right now.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also because like CBS, Viacom CBS owns Nickelodeon. They own part of CW. So then it's like, we could put this on CW and not have to, maybe not have to deal with like licensing stuff or anything like that. So yeah, the new one's bad. It's bad. So that's what I've been checking out this week. So we can wrap things up. Definitely head to our site. You can check out our recent commentaries. We did Class of 1999, and we're gonna have a Blind Fury commentary coming up soon. So definitely keep an eye on the site for that coming up. And you can, if you want to read my No Time to Die review that's up on the site. You also, I got a review of the that Universal Monsters box set if you want to read that as well. And then all the regular stuff that goes on the site every day is up there as well. So I'm checking a lot of stuff out. And yeah, so for Chris, I'm Zach, and we will see you next week. For more Everything Action, head to www.everythingaction.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at EVAction, on Facebook by searching for Everything Action, and follow us on Instagram at everything.action. You can also subscribe and get more episodes on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.